When Jesus shows up, everything changes. When Jesus shows up, everything changes. Everything. And he shows up a lot more than I think we tend to realize. He showed up a long time ago, and he's still showing up. You know, it says that Jesus is the one responsible for speaking creation into being. Yeah, he just spoke and whoop. Well, today I think I'm going to start with an elephant. Whoop. And then we'll go over to a tarantula. Whoop. And then we'll come up with a bill. Whoop. He spoke everything into being. And he shows up a lot more than we realize. Do you know Jesus showed up quite a few times during the Old Testament before he was born in Bethlehem as a baby? You realize that? Quite a few times. Can anybody think of a time that Jesus showed up in the Old Testament? Jason? Pardon? Okay, so that was Jesus in the form of a rock. But literally, he literally showed up in the form of a man even numerous times in the Old Testament. Remember, example, when Abraham was sitting by his tent and three guys came walking up to him, and you read the story and it's very obvious that it was Jesus and two angels. And Jesus started carrying on a conversation with Abraham, saying that I'm come to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because of their evil, evil sin and deeds. And he and Abraham had this talk back and forth. And can you think of other times? How about the time when Jacob was wrestling with an angel? You knew who that angel was? It was Jesus. You read it in contents. Matter of fact, there's an easy way to tell lots of times if, and I know I've said this before, that if it says an angel of the Lord appeared, it could be any angel. It could be Gabriel, could be whoever. But if it ever, whenever it says the angel of the Lord appeared, it's Jesus. Let me give you one other time. Two more times. The second one was where we're going to start today. Remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They were thrown in the fiery furnace, and the king looked in, and there was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and he said, and there's a fourth man in there, and they're all walking around, and they're untied from the ropes we tied him with, and the fourth one looks like it could be the Son of God. You know why it looked that way? Because it was. Jesus showed up. Even in the midst of a hard time like that, and truthfully, that's when he seems to show up the most, when you're going through a hard time, if you're open to it. And you should be, and I should be. But the time we're going to look at today is a story about Gideon. It's found in about three chapters in Judges. If you want to follow along, I'm going to start with chapter 6. Now, Judges is an interesting book because God gave his people, Moses, to lead them out of slavery, out of bondage, out of Egypt, into their promised land. And then Moses died, and Moses appointed Joshua to continue on, and he did, and the people still basically did a decent job of following him. And the elders that followed Joshua, they led afterwards. But after that, it started going downhill. And it said that God rose up specific, what they called judges, that are appointed to bring order into the society. And a judge would come along. He would try to rally the people back around God. Sometimes they would come. And then after the judge died, the people went back to doing anything but worshiping God and fell into slavery and bondage again. And this is like an up and down thing through the whole story of judges, hundreds of years. And one of these times, and several of these times, it said when they were in bondage that the people of God cried out to God for help. Now, my guess, I'm not guessing every single soul in Israel were crying out to God for help any more than every single American is crying out for God for help right now. But there had to be at least a percentage of them, some of them, seriously crying out to God for help. Matter of fact, in chapter 6, it says in verse 6, so Israel was brought very low because of Midian. Midian was the people that God used. Now, you read this and you realize Midian was a headache to the Jewish people, but he was a headache because God sent Midian into the situation to bring his people back to him. So sometimes the hard times that we're going through in our life, we think, you know, where is God? I thought he loved me. Maybe he's using those hard times to try to get our attention and to bring us back to where we need to be with God. And that's exactly what was going on here. They were brought very low by Midian, and the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. And it was during the time of Gideon. Now, Gideon was just a normal farmer type of a guy, but God seen some potential in him. He seen potential in him that Gideon never seen. Now, this is important. Do you realize that God sees more potential in you, every one of us, than we see in ourselves? And don't just say, yeah. Say, wow, is that true? Is that real? I wonder what he does see in me. I wonder what potential he does see. And it happened with Gideon. And I'm going to start with verse 11 in chapter 6. And we're going to read through some of this story. It's an amazing story. And I'm going to start with chapter 6, verse 11. Then, I get this, the angel of the Lord. So who is that? You'll find out in just a few minutes. It was Jesus. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak that is in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, the Abizrite, as his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the wine press in order to save it from the Midianites. Now, obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize he was hiding. You don't beat out wheat in a wine press. You make wine. But anyway, he was trying to get away and save some of this food for himself and for his family. And verse 12, the angel of the Lord, Jesus, appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, O valiant warrior. Now there's something that again, God pointing out potential in an individual more so than that individual ever knew was there. And I'm telling you, God wants to do the same with you and me on a regular basis if we're listening, if we allow him. The Lord said, Lord appeared to him, and the Lord is with you, O valiant warrior. Then Gideon said to him, now is this up here? Yeah, it is. So we're looking at verse 13. I think I'm going to do my dad's trick. I'm going to get glasses that have just clear plastic on the top so I can still see far. But I don't have to keep doing this every time I want to change and read. So anyway, verse 13. Yeah. Then Gideon said to him, O my Lord. Now notice, O my Lord, small L, Lord. He didn't recognize that it was Jesus. yet. Oh, my Lord, small capital or small letter L, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? Now, basically, he was saying, if God is so in love with us, if God is really here, if Jesus is showing up, then doesn't he love us? Why are we in all these dilemmas? Why are we having all these problems? Isn't it typical to blame our problems on someone else? Yeah. Oh, my Lord, small L, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles, which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us. That's a lie. God will never abandon us. Matter of fact, he tells us numerous times in the Bible that he will never leave us. If you struggle with feeling like you're all alone at times, now you don't have to raise your hand. I've went through that at times. Struggling, thinking that you're all alone, you're believing a lie, Jess. Or you're believing a lie, someone else. You know how I know that's a lie? Well, because Jesus tells us in the Great Commission to go into the world, making disciples, teaching them all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Now, this is not a Clinton cliche. Read my lips when I say always. This is Jesus, and he's saying, I'm going to be with you always. You're never going to be alone. Now, you could feel alone. You could feel abandoned. You could feel discarded, but that's a lie from Satan. Let me give you another example. Here's a psalm that most often is read at a funeral, and I do quite often myself. Psalm 23. Psalm 23, a lot of us could probably quote it, but I'm going to read verse 4 to you. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, even though I'm going through a hard time, even though it seems like this is never going to end, it's not going to get better, there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but I will fear no evil. For what? For you are with me. So again, if we're coming to the place where we think we're alone, no one cares, no one's listening, hogwash. And tell that thought, hogwash. Tell that thought, in the name of Jesus, be gone, because that's a lie from the pit of hell. You are never alone. I am never alone. It might feel like it, but feelings many times aren't reality. And so this was Gideon thinking that, you know, if you're here, God, why are all these problems? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian. He has given you into the hand of Midian to get your attention, to bring you back to him. Verse 14, the Lord looked at him and said, go in this your strength and deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. Have I not sent you? That was Jesus speaking to him. Again, calling to attention a lot more capability than Gideon ever seen in himself. Calling about more potential in Gideon than Gideon ever seen in himself. And God wants to do that with you and me on a regular basis. You know why? Because we have a tendency to forget it. At least that's me. God has so much in store to use for us, but we forget it, that he wants to use us in amazing, amazing ways. And he, Gideon, said, verse 15, to him, O Lord. You see, he's catching on here. It's not a small L anymore. This is Jesus speaking to me. Oh, Lord, how shall I deliver Israel? Behold, my family is the least in Manasseh, and I am the youngest in my father's house. But the Lord said to him, surely I will be with you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I will be with you to the end of the ages, even through the valley of the shadow of death. I will fear no evil because you are with me. Surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat Midian as one man. So Gideon said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who speaks to me. Please do not depart from here until I come back to you and bring out to you an offering and lay it before you. And he, Jesus, said, I will remain until you return. Now think about this. You're just reading this in context, and you probably missed this. Denny, you've raised goats, quite a few of them. I don't know if you ever had sheep or not. But anyway, so you had somebody show up, and you realize it's Jesus wanting to speak to you, and you wanting to do something special for him. So you say, Jesus, just sit still under this oak tree while I go prepare a special gift for you. And he went out to butcher a sheep or a goat and make some bread and the broth and bring that all to him. How long do you think it would take you to butcher a goat and cook it up for him? 5 minutes? I mean, you're talking probably several hours. Several hours was going on here. And that's the kind of patience God has with you and I. Isn't that amazing? The kind of patience he would have. Yeah, I'll just sit here. It's not like I have anything else to do. All I'm doing is running the world. I'll wait. So he waited all that time, and whatever time it was, so Gideon said to him, if I found favor, just sit here and I will bring this offering to you. Then Gideon went and prepared a young goat. It was a goat, Denny. And unleavened bread from an amount of flour. He put the meat in a basket and the broth in a pot and brought them out to him under the oak and presented it to them. And the angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread and lay it on the rock and pour on the broth. And so he did so. And this is the part that when I read it in my devotions this week, anybody reading through the Bible, they read the same thing this week. But this is the part when I read it thinking, Jesus, I can really relate to you. Then the angel of the Lord put out his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire sprung up from the rock. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of his staff. You see that? He put out the end of his staff and touched that offering, and flames come up and consumed it. Now, would that be somewhat eerie, convicting, sobering, amazing, all the above? And just when he finally realized this really is God's son. And fire sprang up from the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread, and the angel of the Lord vanished from his sight. Ah, just as I was getting to realize what was going on, and you're gone. Then Gideon saw that it was the angel of the Lord. And he said, "Alas, O Lord God, for now I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." I mean, put yourself in his shoes. He had to be scared spitless. And what did God do? The Lord said to him, "Peace to you. Do not fear. You shall not die." Basically, he was saying, yes, you did see God face to face, but don't let that freak you out. Don't let that rob you of peace. Matter of fact, let that be peace to you. You're not going to die. And then this part here. Then Gideon, verse 24. Then Gideon built an altar there to the Lord, and he named it. What did he name it? Following along or up there? He named the altar, "The Lord is Peace." When I read that this week, I was thinking, not just for myself, but for everybody, that's exactly what we need to do. We need to build an altar in our lives, an altar of peace, so that when all the rough things happen and the things that would steal our peace away and put fear in its place would try to rob us of that peace, we have an altar built there in our lives that know this is the altar of peace, because God said he would never leave me. He will always be there for me. If there's only a few here, this was 30 years ago or so now. Dad, you were here. Marcy was here. My kids were small, but that might have been it. When we had this property first given to us, the first 2 acres, we had a church service right about where we're standing right now. And there's a picture of that down in the hallway in the basement that we framed up and put up there about a year ago. And it was just maybe a handful, 2 handfuls of us there in that service. And during that time, God spoke to us and encouraged us to go down in this field. This wasn't a very productive field. Bill tried to graze corn here several times. It was lousy for corn, but it was great for a church. And God was establishing something here. And to go down and find rocks, every one of us picked 3 rocks representing the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and bring those rocks and put them on a pile there as an altar of remembrance, just like Joshua did when they crossed the sea, or not the sea, but the Jordan River, and to remember. And every time your kids would see those rocks piled there, that they would remember what God had done. And that altar, we ended up cementing the rocks together to keep them in one place, and we had to literally move it with a backhoe because we wanted to make a cement slab there for between the youth center, but it's by one of the girls' cabins there. It's an altar of remembrance of what God did that day, the beginning, our very first offering, our very first service we've ever had on this property. And it was close to 30 years ago. And but can you see the significance? And it would be worth you and I praying. How can I, not should I, of course I should, but how can I build an altar of peace in my life that I can refer back to every time I feel fear rising up into me, anxiety rising up into me, fears that no one cares, fears that no one's here, no one is listening, I'm all alone, hogwash, lies from Satan. Jesus said, "I will never leave you." But he built this altar here to remind himself, if for no other reason, because he needed reminded that God is real. That's the first thing of 3 that I wanted to talk about. from this story. Basically, God is always trying to bring us to the place, you and me, every one of us, bring us to the place where we trust him with our fears, where we trust him with our anxieties, where we trust him with our fixes we got ourselves in or someone else got us in, who knows, but the hard times, that God would be there for us. And he wants to exchange our fears with peace. I think if you and I, and I know this is true because I've done it myself, I'm not 100% there yet, but I have an amazing amount of faith in God to trust him in fearful situations that I never had 20 or 30 years ago. And it's because of what God has done in my life. But it's not just because of what God has done in my life, but because I got serious with God, crying out to God, just like they cried out to God for help and deliverance, and God showed up and did that. Crying out to God for help and deliverance to help me build an altar of peace in my life so I'd have a refuge to refer back to whenever needed. Now, the second thing that I wanted to point out in this story is this. God will normally do things in such a way that there is no doubt in our minds that it was him that saved us. It was him that protected us. It was him that brought us through. It had nothing to do with our own abilities, our own smarts. I've been going to different medical things with my two eyes and my leg. And I've been around a lot of doctors and a lot of medical terms. And as I was reading this, I thought of a new medical term. I guess, Cheryl, you've never even heard of this. Are you ready for this? It's called the WBT syndrome. WBT syndrome. It's a horrible, horrible thing. You know what the WBT syndrome is? It's basically, what's the best thing for me to do? You find yourself in a fix, and isn't that the syndrome you usually fall into? Well, I got a real dilemma here. So what's the best thing I should do? Am I the only one that's ever done that? Am I the only one that struggles with that syndrome? No, we all do. It seems like it's a natural thing to try to figure out what we need to do to get out of that fix. And I'll tell you, it's a waste of your time. It's a waste of your brain energy. It could be a waste of your money trying to buy yourself out, maybe. It's useless because if you could work your way out of the fix, you wouldn't need God. If you could work your way out of the fix, then God did a lousy job of giving you a fix. Because he wants to give you a fix that you cannot work yourself out of so that you could learn to trust him. And think, is there love in that? I would say there's more love than anything you could ever find in that. If he could care less about you, he wouldn't bother to try to bring you closer to himself. He wouldn't try to bring situations into your life that would cause you to have to cling to him, have to call out to him. Two examples that came to my mind, one of them probably 10, 15 years ago, and one of them less than a year ago. And I know I shared these, but they fit in perfectly here. When we began to build this building, we build it by ourselves, basically, and we build it as God gives us the means to do it. Matter of fact, I had to fill out a form for our insurance for our property here. And one of the questions is, how much money are you indebted to? And I said, zero. We've never owed a penny for anything. See what they think when they get that. Because we also have to list what it's worth. And so we'll get that off of our insurance and stuff like that. But so we were building this, but as we were two-thirds of the way done, a buddy from labor and industry, not really a buddy. If you know anything about labor and industry, most people don't consider them buddies. And you're smiling, you know what I mean. But yet, I think it was God that sent that buddy here. He said, you know, you're building this building, and we've given you a lot of grace. You've been working on this 2 or 3 years now. I'm going to have to tell you, you're going to have it finished within 2 months, or we're going to revoke the building permit. Now, he could have done it on the spot if he really wanted to be mean. But I don't remember if it was 2 or 3 months. It wasn't much longer than that. And the dilemma was we didn't have any firewall between the basement and the upstairs here. And to get the fire base, the wall, or we had to have the insulation there. We had to have the sheetrock up there. We had to have all the metal strips for the lights and all. But then the big cost, if that wasn't enough, that was thousands in itself. The big cost is we had to have specially fire-rated ceiling tiles. I forget what they're worth. Give you a guess, Jess. I would say $7, $8, $10 a piece. Fire-rated ceiling tiles through the whole basement. Thousands and thousands of dollars. We're talking $5,000, $6,000 just for ceiling tiles, probably more. I'm making sure I go under, so it's not an exaggeration. Where are we going to come up with them? I forget who it was, but somebody said, you know, Armstrong Ceiling Tile Company, they have a warehouse down in Lancaster, and they manufacture them. Maybe if you call them, they could work out some type of a payment plan or something like that with you. So I said, well, what have we got to lose? Our days are ticking off here. And we could have this place shut down. I mean, they could literally do that. Legally, they could do that. So give them a call and got a hold of this person that's in charge of the ceiling tile department. I can't remember her name off now. I know it's in my first book. But anyway, and the specifics, what? Vicki Cook? Vicki Day. You're right. Vicki Day. That's a pretty good memory. But anyway, this lady picked up and said, hi, my name is Vicki. How can I help you? Well, we're in dire straits here at our church. We need to come up with thousands and thousands of dollars worth of ceiling tile. And we have about $150 to our name. What kind of deal can you work out where we could have a payment plan or something like that? And she said, well, what's your name? I said, well, my name is Jess Shingler. Shingler, are you related at all to Marcy Shingler? I said, yeah, kind of. She's my wife. Why? You're Marcy Shingler's wife. No, I'm Marcy Shingler's husband. Thank you. But anyway, you knew what I was saying. It's the drugs I'm on for my leg. But anyway, she said, let me tell you about your wife. Okay, what do you want to tell me about my wife? She said, well, she was the main conference speaker at a women's convention down in Lancaster just a couple weeks ago. And she did such an amazing job. And at the end of the teaching, she offered an altar call. And I literally ran up to the altar to have Marcy pray with me. And she ministered to me in such a deep, deep way. I've never been this high in my life. I'm excited all the time about Jesus. And now, what did you say you need help with? I said, well, we need some ceiling tiles, fire-rated ones, those real expensive ones, and lots of it. I mean, a semi-truck full of them. Do you have them? Do you carry them? Oh, yeah, we make them. They are pretty solid. They are pretty expensive. Well, what kind of deal could we come up with? And she said, you hire the biggest truck you can find and drive it to Lancaster, and we'll go over the details. That could be scary, huh? Luckily, I had my $100 in my pocket to go down there. And I can't remember. I think I took one or two other guys with me. I don't think it was you. It was scary. Well, because you didn't have this altar of peace built into your life yet. But anyway, we got there, and we found Vicky. And lady, probably about Marcy's age, never met her, just talked to her on the phone, knocked on her door, and she opened up the door, and she said, are you Jess Schinkler? I said, yes. And she ran over and gave me this big bear hug. This lady you never met before and didn't want to let go. And I was thinking, what is going on here? And she said, here, sign these papers. What are these papers for? Your ceiling tiles. Well, I need to know what the deal was first. Well, you got a big truck. We got the biggest truck we could get, the biggest U-Haul they make. Well, how big is it? I told her. And she told the guys, go get the fire-rated Armstrong ceiling tiles, as many as we have, and fill that truck to the max. How much is this going to be? Said, didn't you say you were Marcy's husband? No, I said I was Marcy's wife. Now, didn't you say you were Marcy's husband? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what it'll cost you. Zilch. Take them home and be blessed. Only God could have done that. There's no way that could have worked out. It was beyond my ability to ever do anything like that. If you remember last year, the week before kids camp, this is where we were at. And I brought it up and I was honest with you and I said, we just need to really connect with God. Only God can get us out of this fix. Because it was Sunday and the next Monday or Tuesday, we were going for the Aldi run, you know, where we buy over $1,000 worth of Aldi food and bring it here and put it in the freezers and the coolers. Only, number one, we couldn't get the freezer and cooler unit working. It was running, but it wasn't running cool enough. It wasn't running cool enough to keep the milk. It definitely wasn't running cool enough to freeze the ice cream and all those things and the meats. And then to top it off, the same day, remember, our air conditioning died here. Remember that? It was like a scorcher in here. And in a couple days, we were going to be jumping and hollering and hooting with 150 kids in here with no air conditioning. But that's all right, because they would never be able to find this place because our tractor had broken down and it was sitting out in the weeds. So we didn't have a tractor that was running. We didn't have air conditioning that was working, and we didn't have a core unit that was running and working to put all that food in, and we had to turn that the freezer unit on within 24 hours to get it cooled down enough to put all that Aldi's food in, because the kids are coming. We couldn't wait. That was the dilemma we were in. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. Many of you probably remember that last year. And I remember saying, God, this is beyond our capability, but that's a good place to be, because now we have to totally depend on you to work out all these things. And I had no idea what to do. I had some peace, but my altar wasn't real big. I just didn't know what to do. So we all prayed and we all went home And I'm wondering, okay, how is this going to work out? I was almost tempted to fall into that WDD syndrome, figuring out, well, what's the best thing I can do? There isn't anything best I could do. And sometime during the afternoon, the guy that helped us install our freezer units, Ken and Sylvia's son, John, he called out of the blue. Hi, Jess, how you doing? Well, we're doing fine. How's those freezer units working? Well, truthfully, John, they're not. I mean, they look nice. It's cool in there, but not enough to keep food and definitely not enough to freeze. And we tried everything we can. We just can't get them to work. This is Sunday night. I don't know if John had other plans, but he said, meet me at the church in an hour and we'll have them going. Now, I never even called him. He called me. He got him up and running, cooling. You know how to freeze ice cream in a big freezer unit? It has to be 10 below zero. I never knew that before. Yeah, I mean, we're not talking getting them down a couple degrees. 10 below zero has to be in there for the meat and the ice cream and stuff. And then same day, an ex-camper counselor contacted and said, here you're having problems with your air conditioning. Can I come over and see what we can do? It's Elliot Molesky. Got it up and running. And Jimmy said, let me see what I can do with that tractor sitting out in the field. Got it up and running. I mean, everything worked out, but the big thing was that freezer unit. We didn't have a day to spare. We had to go get the Aldi's food. We had to get it in there, and it had to be cold to keep it safe. And you see, sometimes those dilemmas that seem like impossibilities to us are impossibilities to us, but God's looking at them as a chance to prove himself in charge. Now, before I read a couple verses from chapter 7, I want everybody to stand up for a second, okay? You do that? Okay. Steve, we're going to start with you. We're going to count off 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and go all the way around. Everybody has to have a 1 or a 2 or a 3, okay? Go ahead, Joel. Three. You guys back there? Three. Everybody remember the number? You have to stay standing just for a few minutes, okay? Don't forget your number. Chapter 7. I'm going to start reading in verse 1. Then Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, God changed Gideon's name to Jerubbaal, or his dad changed his name to Jerubbaal, which basically means someone who is standing up for God rather than the false prophets. So then all the people who were with him rose early and camped outside the spring of Hard at the camp of Midian, which was on the north side of them on the hill country of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into your hands. What do you mean too many for you? For Israel would become boastful, saying, My own power has delivered me. They thought they could do it on their own. Now, therefore, come, proclaim in the hearing of all the people, saying, whoever there is that is afraid and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead. So 22,000 people went home, only leaving 10,000 left to fight all these hordes of the Midianites. That means over two-thirds of them were sent home because they were scared and they didn't have an altar of peace in their life. So that means every number two, sit down. Every number three, sit down. I'm glad I'm a three. But anyway, two-thirds of your whole army are gone. They were sent home. God said, there's too many for me to prove to the people that it's me that's going to do it and not you. So now there's just a few of you standing. It would have been hard before to fight 1,000, 100,000 Midianites, right? But now you send two-thirds of your army men home. Now there's just a few of you left. Then the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. What? Bring them down to the water and I will test them there for you. And for not time's sake, I'll just basically tell you. Some of them are going to stoop down and lick the water with their tongue like a dog would do. And some of them will kneel and bring the water up to their mouth. And, you know, when I was reading this before, I thought, you know, if I was a Gideonite and I had all these bad guys around me, I would stoop down and keep my eyes, my one sword, my hand on the sword, and my other hand bringing some water up to drink. I'm not going to lay my spear or my sword down and get down on my belly and lick like water from a dog. And then God said, the ones that got down on their belly and licked water like their dog, there's only 300 of them. Send the other 9,700 home. Now it's down to 300. Steve, you were the first number one. You get to stand. All the rest, go on home. Go on home, sit down. Steve. And don't get so full-headed to think, I got this thing. You don't got this thing. You don't stand a chance. You never stood a chance before with 30,000. Now it's just you. Yep. Exactly. Right. The ones that he could have used, he sent home. The ones that weren't very observant of what's going on around him, those are the ones we're going to use. The third point. Well, let me read. I guess I did read enough of that. You can sit down. The third point is this. He, God, always is in total control of every aspect of every circumstance in your life. Now that might be hard to believe, but it's scriptural and it's true and it's reality. Let me say that again. God is always, say always, in total control, say total control, of every aspect, say it, of every circumstance . If you don't believe that doesn't make it not true. It's true. The Bible's full of stories that says that is true. Now, you come up with your own dilemma that you're in now and limit it to just one. I know some of you have 17 to pick from, but just think of the one right now. If you could get out of that dilemma, what would it be? I know a lot of you have some major dilemmas going on. Truthfully, dilemmas are part of life. But if you can learn to hand them over to God and to go to God and ask for his help. See, the hardest thing for God is not timing. Because timing, he has control of timing. The hardest thing for God is not abilities. He has the ability to do anything, anywhere, with anyone, anytime. The hardest thing is not to deal with the fears, the fear factors. Let me show you something here. I'm going to start reading in verse 9 of chapter 7. Now the same night it came about that the Lord said to him, "Arise," said to Gideon, "arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hands. But if you are afraid to go down, go with Purah, your servant, down to the camp. And you will hear what they say. And afterwards, your hands will be strengthened that you may go down against the camp." So he went down with Purah. So he still had some fear needing to be worked out. And that would be a fearful thing to do. You and one buddy going down, sitting right outside the tents of the enemies. So he went down with Purah, his servant, down to the outpost of the army that was in the camp. Now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts. And their camels were without number, as numerous as the sands of the seashore. That's all right. We have 300. We can do this. Then Gideon came, and behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend. And he said, "Behold, I had a dream and a loaf of barley bread." Are you ready? I should do it with somebody with glasses, shouldn't I? "And behold, a loaf of barley bread was tumbling down into the camp of Midian. And it came to the tent and struck it so that it fell. And it turned upside down so that the tent laid flat." His friend replied, "This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, the man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hand." Now, if there was ever a doubt before that God is not in control of everything, the timing, the ability, the needs, the provision, all those things, the strength. He can even take the enemy and put dreams in their heads at night to convince them to do what he wants them to do. Now, you would say, "Well, if I had a dream about a big loaf of barley bread coming down at me, and I was getting hit in the eyes with barley flakes, last thing I would have thought about was, this is Gideon. We're dead meat." But you know, that's the interpretation that God put in the enemy's minds. He can not only give the enemy's dreams, he can give the enemy's interpretations to make them work along with what he wants to do. Now, if that's not amazing, You're asleep. That is very amazing that God would do that and could do that, because God is in charge of everything, every detail, all the time, no matter what needs to have happen. Verse 15. I'm going to read down here a couple verses. Then Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation, and this is how he responded. And he bowed in worship, and rightfully so. God, you really are in charge. You really are in charge of even giving dreams to the enemy that convinces them and convinces me that this is you and you're behind this and this is going to work. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into our hands." And he divided the 300 men into three companies and put trumpets and empty pitchers into the hands of all of them and torches inside the pitchers. And he said to them, "Look at me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. And when I do, all who are with me, blow your trumpets. Then you also blow your trumpets all around the camp and shout and say, for the Lord and for Gideon." Now you got to remember, this is in the middle of the night. So Gideon and the 300 who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch. I would guess that was probably around 2 or 3 in the morning. When they had just posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers and that were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, and they held up the torches with their left hand and their trumpets in the right hand, blowing and crying, "A sword for the Lord and Gideon." Now, think of this. Several million enemies, 300 of them circling around, but it's in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, all you hear is shouting that they're coming to get us. And you see the fire, and you hear the trumpets, and you hear the shouts. I could see where any of you ever get startled out of a dead sleep and do some stupid things. You know what they did? Verse 21. Each stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran, crying out as they fled. hysterical. Crying out as they ran. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole company. God can even cause confusion. I've prayed for confusion to come into situations before. It didn't seem like it was the scriptural thing happening. God confused the enemy's plans. And he confused them to the place where they drew their swords and killed one another. Is God in charge? Can he pull anything off that needs to be pulled off if need be? Yes. What was that one thing I had to repeat? We'll say it again. God always. Okay, two of you got it. Now we'll see if the rest of you can catch here. God always. Shout it. God always is in total control, total of every aspect of everything. And we already talked about God. It's not a problem for God, the timing, the abilities, the need, the discernment that supplies. God's biggest problem is always the same: to convince us that we can trust him. To bring us to the place where we have that altar of peace built in our lives, that no matter what happens, God is still in control. And he can manipulate anything, even give the enemy dreams about barley bread rolling down the hill and wiping out their whole society, which is exactly what happened. God, help us not to be the hindrance. Help us to be part of the answer, and the answer is not to do it ourselves or to try to figure out how to do it ourselves, but to cry out to you and see you do the amazing things that no one else could ever do, even if it means causing confusion to come into the camp. Think you could apply that to your dilemma you're going through? Could you apply that to your job situation, Joel? Could you apply that to your truck situation, Bill? Could you apply that to health situations? Could you apply it to family situations? Could you apply it to relational problems you're dealing with right now? There's nothing you couldn't apply it to. All your legs have been kicked out from under your table. Now, it might not happen as fast and as you would hope or whatever, but it'll happen in God's timing in the very best way it could ever have happened. Because that's the kind of God we have.